to thank the speaker, thank the organizers for inviting me to this very nice conference. So the subject will be sort of fluctuation theory in symmetric PNG. So it's joint work with Jinho Baik, Alexei Borodin, and Eric Rains. So first I'll just describe the not the symmetric PNG model, but the basic PNG model, which was introduced around 99 or 2000 by Preyhofer and Spohn, and also a discrete version by Kurt Johansson. So you start by drawing on the XT plane, and then you look at this region inside this quarter plane inside there, and you put a Poisson process. You just put a Poisson process with intensity 2 inside there, and then from this process you then induce a certain dynamics. So I'm going to describe the dynamics right now. So the dynamic starts with there's also one point here. The dynamic starts with an island at zero, which has height 1 and which grows to the left and the right with speed 1. As time goes up, whenever you see a Poisson point, it essentially is a nucleation on the island. So what will happen? So this is your base island. It will grow, and then you'll see a Poisson point, and you put a nucleation there, which is just another island, which starts there, and then grows out with speed 1 and minus 1 on the right and left. And as you go further and further up the picture, you keep creating islands and you grow up. So this is a basic growth process, which is constructed in exactly as I said. And then you will be interested in studying various statistical properties about this process. Well, if the islands collide, then they just merge. So just the left end point of the left island will keep going, and the right end point. I'm just saying that you start with a nucleation, and then it expands. It just you take a point, you expand with speed 1 to the right and speed 1, and you create an island in this way, and then you continue.
When a left wall hits another nucleation point.
When a left wall of a right island hits the right wall of a left island, right? You just create an island. I mean, it just merges. Right, so you've got a process in time. So this is time evolving. This is snapshots in time, right? And as time goes up, you pick up new nucleations. Because I told you you have a nucleation at the origin at time zero, they're all sitting on this base island, and then you continue in this fashion. And there's nothing more complicated than dynamics in terms of that description. Is that okay? Okay. So then you can ask basic probabilistic questions about this. So you can ask how what are the basic statistical properties of this growth process? So what happens? What happens to this island? In particular, what happens to the height of the height as a function of space and time? Well, there's a law of large numbers for this, and just says if you take the height at position x, so first of all you might as well just scale space and time so they're sitting on the unit, essentially on unit length, and if you take the height at time t and position x, what will happen as t gets large? Well, it turns out it will behave like 2 times the square root of t squared minus s. So it's just a big It's just a big circle. It's a half circle, right? And that's how. So, in other words, if your position x a little bit to the right, you just have a large number which says you basically behave like 2 times square root of 1 minus x over t squared. So that's the law of large numbers for thing. And then you can ask about the fluctuations in the height. And that turns out, so the order of the fluctuations turn out to be t to the 1/3. And this is the connection to sort of random matrices right here, is that the fluctuations behave in the you take the height at t and x times t to the 2/3. So just a little bit, t to the 2/3 is the right spatial scale to take. You take that height, you subtract out the mean, and then you divide that to 2/3, and then depending on x, there's a slight shift, which is this minus x squared. You ask, what's the probability of the height when you take out the mean and divide by essentially the variance? What's the probability it's less than psi? And that turns out to be the Tracy-Witham distribution for the top eigenvalue of GUE random matrix. So that's what one means by fluctuation result in this setting.
So the fluctuation is not at the edge of the picture.
Well, it's not at the edge of the picture, but it's so for instance, take the origin, take x equals 0. Okay, you're looking at the height of this droplet that you've created. You're looking at how it's you found its mean. And then you subtract that and you ask about it's essentially its variance, and can you actually get your hands on the distribution? And it turns out that the distribution is that distribution. You can get your hands on it, and it's the Tracy-Witham distribution. This is what Preyhofer-Spohn and Kurt Johansson discovered. Okay, so that's what one means by a fluctuation result. And yesterday, Sasha described the GUE, the Tracy-Witham. Okay, then you can ask about this at the level of processes, as opposed to just simple numbers. And you can ask if you look at your picture and you look at one space point x1 and another space point x2, how does the height fluctuate? What's the behavior of the height fluctuate as you move in x1 and x2? And that can be described in the following way. There is some kernel which we can just call the extended area kernel. It's this A of xi times I prime. And the process you're looking at is a process in x, which is ht of x, which is that. And you can ask, what's the probability of the height at time t at position x1 is less than xi1, and ht xn is less than xin. So that's looking at the finite dimensional distributions of the process, thought of as a process in space. And it turns out that this can be written as a Fredholm determinant of 1 minus some operator A on certain L2 space, and that process is the Airy process. So that's something that was also studied by Preyhofer-Spohn and Johansson. So that's what one means by the on the process level. Okay. Are there any questions up to this point about the model? Okay. Okay. So a few remarks about what goes into very very vague remarks about what goes into the analysis for that. Essentially, you don't just look at the top level. So it comes down to what you want to keep track of. You want to keep track of. Of more than that in order to be able to do analysis. And so then the question that was asked about what happens when two islands collide comes into the picture. So you start out The way you describe this roughly is you start out with a bunch of straight lines. Okay? Labeled 0, minus 1, minus 2, you know, on down. And then you start the nucleation process, and that's on the top line. When two ions collide, they create a nucleation on the level below, exactly at the place at which there was a collision. Now, at the level below, another ion forms and it starts to go. And one can keep doing this, and then one gets a multilayer, what's called multilayer polynuclear growth process. So essentially, you're keeping track of all of the history. That's what this picture does. It keeps track of all of the history of the process. And this turns out to be a determinantal point process. This is a point process whose correlation functions have a determinantal form with a certain kernel, which is an example of what Sasha was talking about yesterday with these point processes. And it turns out to be one that you can analyze in terms of non-intersecting line ensembles. So that's okay. General remarks is in this kind of setting, what tends to come up are symmetric functions and weight functions tend to come up in sort of anti-symmetric indeterminantal forms. And from time to time, you see Schur functions. Actually, quite often you see various Schur functions come up, and that enables you to do certain computations. So essentially, this model is exactly solvable, and then you need to do asymptotics on it. Okay, so now we'll come to the. So this is the symmetric. So now it's kind of the symmetric PNG. Okay, so the symmetric PNG has the same type of dynamics as the PNG, except there's another condition. So rather than consider the positive half line in space, and then that's still time, and you put the Poisson process of rate 1 over square root 2 in this wedge. Okay. And the reason it's called symmetric is you could just reflect this over and make it a completely symmetric picture, or not, and you'll get the same picture. So I'll just do it like that. And then on the edge, on the x equals 0, at x equals 0, you put another Poisson process with rate alpha over square root of 2 for nucleations. And that's what's meant by source. And then you ask what do the dynamics look like in this case? So what will they produce in this case? And it turns out that they produce they produce something interesting. But one can start with the law of large numbers. The law of large numbers: if you take alpha less than or equal to 1, then you get the same type of picture you got for the PNG picture. If you take alpha, if you take alpha bigger than one, then what you get is a real effect from the boundary. You get a series effect from the boundary, and your law of large numbers will change. It will keep part of this, and then it will grow linearly. Backwards, like this is supposed to be linear, and that's because you essentially what's going on at the origin really affects out a certain distance. It really does it. So it's as though you just have a sum of IID random variables in a sense, just at the origin, and they control what's going on to a certain extent for a positive distance. And so the law of large numbers will either be this or that, depending on okay. So now the fluctuation picture, this is what the fluctuation picture will look like. So x bar is just x over t. Again, just bringing things back to the interval 0, 1. Alpha is your parameter at the edge, how strongly you're putting a source at the edge. And then you can ask in different parts of the picture, what will the fluctuations behave like? So if you're positive, if you're strictly positive, what you will get, and alpha is less than, well, an alpha is less, then what you'll get is Gaussian unitary ensemble type of fluctuations. If you're at zero, if you're at spatial point zero and you are strictly less than one, then you'll get Gaussian symplectic ensemble fluctuation behavior. If you are at one, if alpha is equal to one, then you'll get Gaussian orthogonal ensemble. It's just symmetric matrices with Gaussian weight. And then if alpha is bigger than one, and x is to the left of this line, x bar is to the left of this line, this curve, alpha squared minus, then you will get Gaussian behavior. Okay? So, I can give you intuition for a bunch of them. I can't give you an intuition for what's going on there. I have none, right? Except a computer. Inside where you see GUE, essentially, what you've got is you're far enough from the boundary that what you're really seeing is the PNG we talked about before. You're not seeing the edge effect. So you're seeing it from inside the bulk in some sense. But not in the bulk in the same sense as random matrices. If alpha is strictly bigger than one, then basically everything is controlled by x equals zero, by the nucleation process at x equals zero. That's just a Poisson process. And if you look for large time, you're just going to see Gaussian fluctuations there. The mean is easy to calculate, and then you're going to see Gaussian fluctuations. Well, the mean is not actually, I mean, the mean for what the Poisson is easy, but not necessarily with the PNG from the, The GOE, is something which you would expect to show up for some parameter value of alpha. It might not be clear what that parameter value is, but you'd expect it to show up for some for the following reason. Essentially, when we saw these line on that's not right. We saw these line ensembles. These, if you were to look from very far away, you might and you were to normalize. If you were to look from very far away, you could perhaps convince yourself that what you were looking at was essentially, you could imagine that you could compute the probabilities in the sense of going from here to the middle and back. In this picture, you only essentially have half of that picture. So there's a reason. So if you believe that this has a certain determinantal form, then what you would essentially be doing when looking at half of this picture is looking at sort of an integral of a determinant. And that would produce the Pfaffian form, and that would be very similar to GOE type of calculation. So it's believable that you would get GOE for some parameter value. GSE, I can't really give intuition as to why that's true. It's just a calculation at this point. Okay. Okay, so that's into a cell. I'll now describe the statement in more detail. So if you consider time points t1 through tn, and you consider space points x1 through xn, such that they don't sit in each other's such that they don't fit in each other's... you consider points which essentially don't fit in each other's forward light cones in this way. That's what the condition... That's what that condition says. We don't know how to do the case where they would sit in each other's lives. But you consider the case where they don't sit in each other's lives cones, and you can ask about the fluctuations. You can ask about the fluctuations for such sets of points. You let H be a vector in 0, 1, 2, to the n, and ZH be just the integers past, you know, H plus 1 on. It's possible, so Bardeen and Range recognize this process, this process, this symmetric PNG, so they recognize it as a Pfaffian-Schur process, which basically means you can write the probabilities of such type of line ensembles in terms of product of skew-Schur functions, and you only have one constraint. So roughly speaking, that's what it means. But it essentially has a certain product structure and one free boundary. And so this allows one to do some analysis, and this is what you can start to say. So again, we look at the probability that at time one, time t1x1, the height is less than h1, and tnxn, the height is less than hn, and this is essentially, just look at the second layer, square root of Fredholm determinant of 1 minus a certain integral operator on L2 of ZH1 through ZHN. J is the standard antisymmetric. This is 0 delta minus delta 0. If you're on the diagonal, it's 0 if you're off the diagonal. So you're looking at 2x2 block matrices. And KH is an operator with a certain matrix kernel. And it happens to be skew symmetric, and the form of K can be written in this form. So there's essentially some generating functions that have to do with these Schur functions where you can pull out coefficients in a certain way, and that happens to be the form of the, so it's just some contour, double contour integrals of certain functions. So that's the form in which you can write down the probabilities just mentioned. So one can write this in a bit of a different way, which turns out to make things a bit easier. So you can write the k's as Riemann sums, essentially, where those are the entries. It's difficult to get a thick picture of what's. I mean, these are sort of just long computations, but it turns out you can write it. You can write the k's in this way, such a way that this makes it. This turns out to have very nice limiting properties. So now you're in a position to scale and just say a few words about how you scale. Okay. So remember, alpha equal 1 is the point where you're forcing. And we should get GOE. So basically, we need to scale all the variables in the problem. So alpha should basically be scaled around 1. T should grow linearly, plus a fluctuation of tau to the T should be scaled in this way. Tau plus 2 capital T times tau to the 2/3. Okay, that says that the spatial fluctuation should be looking at tau to the 2/3. S, the other time variable, should be the same. Then X and Y should be scaled as well, in the way of the same. Two times capital X is an order one variable, times tau to the 2/3. So what are you doing? You're looking. Again, you have this picture. You're looking over here. And you're saying, okay, I'm going to focus at this point. Time is not here, but time gets scaled. So I'm going to focus at this point, and I'm going to scale out in X on the range of tau to the 2/3. And what I expect is the height fluctuations that we're looking at is going to be order tau to the 1/3. But that's all that's going on, and then I'm going to let alpha vary a little bit and try to get all the behavior by just looking in a small region around alpha equal 1 and taking limits. So you let omega t f x and y just be order 1 variable satisfying these conditions. And this is how you scale. This is essentially how you scale the kernel for the heights. So this is the order 1 variable of interest, and it scales as tau to the 1/3. So now in these regimes you can do steepest descent analysis, and you can evaluate how these current. As Sasha suggested, really you need to do trace class, but here just you can do trace class, but for the moment just doing point wise this is how the entries in the kernels will behave. So certain formulas, but you already see things that are going to look like. So when you look at these Q's and Q hats, you already see airy functions popping up, and integral of airy functions, and so that's what shows up in these pictures. So let me. Okay, let me show what the result ends up being. So there's some other things you need to do. But so basically you take these time points, you take these x points as we said before, and you ask this question, and now you're taking tau to infinity, you're looking for a limit theorem, and you just asked about the height fluctuations in the way we just did, and you get the square root of a determinant of 1 minus some operator A sub H. The operator A has a form which now you can just take limits. So it has this kind of form where the R's, the Q's were defined in terms of these contour integrals, and then you're in a position to do things very easily. You can take the expressions that are there, and so I'll just do one example. So if you take the GUE. And the GOE, GSE work basically in exactly the same way. You take X and Y were your order one variables, right? You take X and Y, you take them to infinity in such a way that their difference is order one, so you basically have X over Y going to one, and you just take the limits of the entries of the kernels. When you take when you take these limits, for instance, you just get q will go to 1/2 times the area function. 1 over x times that will go, you'll essentially get the area functions coming out. Now, when you stick these into the A's, right, into the entries of the A's, what you'll get is that that certain entries will go to 0. And then when you look at A22, A22 will basically go to the extended area kernel, which came up in the second or third slide on the basic PNG process, and these limits are very easy to take. You just look at the formulas, and after it's been set up, you just take them, and you get the extended area kernel out. So you see that you get GUE behavior once you have that, because that describes the area process. So something different happens in, so the Gaussian case is not quite as straightforward. Computationally it's not quite as straightforward, and conceptually it's so you basically take here for the Gaussian case you take linear scaling. Because it's no longer appropriate to take two-thirds. So here's your picture. Now, when alpha is much bigger than, so why would, first, why would you expect, suppose you took alpha much, much bigger than 1. So alpha is very large. Essentially, you would be seeing something where there are very few Poisson points inside the wedge, and you would be seeing many Poisson points on the boundary. Now, if you only had Poisson points on the boundary, what you would get is a Brownian motion, which comes out with essentially a transport equation, like a first-order PDE. You essentially, if you looked at x and y positions would scale like x times capital X times time and capital Y times time. What you would see is Brownian motions at two different times. So you would expect something of that to remain in the picture when you put the Poisson points down. You bring alpha down to close to 1. So it turns out that's the case. You get essentially a time change Brownian motion, but in a very simple way. So mu will be the mean, and mu will essentially be the variance, and then you'll scale the heights according to the means and the variance. So you'll say u scales like mu of x times tau plus mu of x times u square root tau. There's no more 1/3 anymore. That's disappeared, and you'll ask exactly the same type of question, and what it'll turn out being is if you ask the height at time tau x tau minus the mean divided by the variance being less than h1 and same for a different time, you'll get the same as probability the Brownian motion for some time is less than h2 and at time 1 it's less than h1. So that's what you can end up showing. So essentially you've got a Brownian motion which comes out in some sense, and you're looking at different times. So once you've subtracted out the means, that's what you get. So that's a picture of. So I finished very, very early. Well, but that's roughly speaking the picture of what you will get. Intuition. Is there questions on roughly what's
yeah? Yeah, feeling some kind of intuitive idea why fluctuation in this picture are somehow same as fluctuation in the other matrices?
I can give an intuitive picture of that. And it applies to many, many of the models which come up. And there's a very basic picture, which I mean, this picture is the one I always think of when doing this. If you took Brownian motions on just, this is time zero, this is time two, right? And you just condition them, K Brownian motions, you condition them not to intersect, right? And to return to the origin. What you get is, if you look at the midpoint, you get, yes, what's the probability that the Brownians are at point x1, x2, through xn? What you get is k by k Geely. You'll get the distribution for the spectrum of k by k Geely in matrices. Okay, if now you would take k to infinity, for instance, and what are you really doing when you're looking at this Airy process? You're looking very close in. You're looking very close in here, and you're looking at the top path. And then you're blowing it up so that the top path, this is on order k to the minus two-thirds, and the height you're looking at is k minus one-third. You're looking in that region, then you're going to blow that up to unit size. And you're going to continue blowing that up to unit size. And then what you'll get is the Airy process. Okay, so then that's on the one hand, right? On the other hand, you look at these, and this is not a proof of anything, right? This is not how any proof goes, but this is some intuition for. You look at, that's not right, but okay. So you look at these line ensembles, and essentially you get the same kind of thing. You get a bunch of non-intersecting paths. Now it happens that the probability distribution has a determinantal form, and it happens that essentially it has a determinant times a determinant. And that's exactly, and it turns out that these things can be written essentially in forms of, when you look at finite, essentially in the form of van der Mond squared type things, times product, times some product, just a product of some measure, you know, an n-fold product of some measure. So, and this is the object which usually goes to. This is the object which usually shows Tracy Witham type distributions. So then if you're looking at multi-times, right, that's when the Airy process will come up. Because then you're not looking at one point, but you're looking at several points, and then you're blowing that picture up. Okay? So that would be looking at a few points and blowing that picture up. And you're always blowing it up around the law of large numbers, so there's a small correction that needs to be made, because the law of large numbers has this semicircle sitting there, and the heights are not the same, so you need a small correction in it. But that's roughly speaking what's going on. Intuitively, you need one model which you like the most. This is the one I like the most, right? Different people like different models, but it's that sort of, that's the thing which is going on a lot of the time. Not necessarily all the time, but a lot of the time when you see the random matrix fluctuation, something like that is going on in the background.
So having a determinantal kernel is more or less the same as having non-intersecting?
No, having a determinantal kernel is not necessarily the same as that. I mean, determinantal kernel is a bit more general than this, right? I mean, if you can put the problem in that format, the non-intersecting, then often you get this you get that correlation functions can be written as determinant of some kernel. Often, not so there. Well, the Airy kernel is just essentially the fluctuations of just a one-dimensional random variable, right? The extended Airy kernel comes in when you're looking at multipoints, right? So you're looking at it. You're still not looking at it at the process level. In some sense, you have to prove something for it to go, but you're looking at multipoints and you're saying what's the finite dimensional distributions of something. And then you need to show that you have a process. But the starting point is showing you have finite dimensional distributions. And then, so that's, and when you look at that multipoint thing, you don't get the, you get a different kernel, and it's the extended airy kernel. So if you took the extended airy kernel and you fixed the position so that they're the same, so it's of the form, it's of the form kx xi x prime xi prime, and you basically fixed, you want to look at one, you wanted to look at the same position, then you could recover the airy, just the airy kernel, airy times airy prime minus airy times airy prime with them switched over x minus y. So you could recover it in that way. But it's just a more general thing. It's like saying what's the difference between looking at Brownian motion versus looking at a Gaussian random variable. That's essentially what it is. So, okay.